Good afternoon. I call the House Education Policy Committee to order. Happy Pi Day, education folks. We're very happy to be here on March 14th. Our first order of business today is approving the minutes from Friday, March 10th. Representative Frazier, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes, and would you like to make a motion?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would like to make the motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion of the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. There we go. We have the minutes. All right. And we will go back to Representative. The motion to the minutes to approve the minutes for March 10th are approved. And we will now go back to Representative Frazier for our first bill, House File 2097. Get settled in there. All right, members, it is our intent to refer this bill to the Education Finance. And Representative Frazier, would you like to make the motion to bring House File 2097 before us to be re-referred to Education Finance Committee?
That is my motion, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Then, Representative Frazier, please. Oh, and you do have an A1 amendment, I believe.
I do, Madam Chair.
All right. Shall we bring that before us then? Would you like to speak to the amendment, Representative Frazier?
Madam Chair, this is mostly to get the bill in line with the Senate version of the companion version in the Senate. I think it's mainly mostly technical changes that we made and also feedback we got from MDE to make sure that we were addressing any concerns that they had with the bill.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? All right. Seeing no discussion, we will move the A1 author's amendment before us. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Wonderful. All right. Now, with the bill as amended, Representative Frazier, please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, many, if not all of us, have likely heard stories of active shooter drills in schools, maybe from our own children, as I know my youngest, who was 9 years old. I've picked her up on occasions, and she's described these drills to me, and they're kind of, sometimes they're quite shocking, because when I hear her begin to tell them, I get nervous, my heart rate elevates, and I get a little anxious hearing her talk about the experience of going through these drills. Or some of you may have heard it from other teachers or staff. I've also heard it from them as well, working in the area of education, and then also from my constituents asking if there are things we can do to maybe do it in a better way, do it in a way that's more thoughtful for our children that have to go through this experience. House File 2097 is a bill that puts parameters around active shooting drills, shooter drills, and simulations conducted in our public schools. Now, while we may agree or disagree on the efficacy of active shooter drills, the fact remains that many, if not all, Minnesota's public schools conduct these drills throughout the year as part of the statutory requirement to run 5 lockdown drills per year. Active shooter drills have become commonplace and can be done in a variety of ways, from tabletop exercises to full-scale simulations that could even involve things like fake blood, pellet guns, and law enforcement sweeps. And I will say that I've talked to Representative Baker, and I know you do a little bit different, which I like the way you do it, and I know we'll get a chance to talk about that. We know these full-scale simulations or drills can be incredibly traumatizing, which is why this bill is crafted to set up culturally appropriate and evidence-based supports for students. The language you have before you today is a result of direct advocacy from students and their peers. Students want the opportunity to be involved and take charge of their own safety. They want their peers to be included and welcomed in this work. They want the opportunity to learn how to prevent violence by recognizing early warning signs and taking action. Now, this bill doesn't add drills or prescribe how each district needs to run their drills. The bill simply says, if you're going to run an active shooter drill, here's what needs to be considered or provided to support our students in their physical and mental well-being. From a high level, some of the main elements are We provide a definition of active shooter drill versus active shooter simulation. We provide some parameters on when simulations can be provided. We're looking at off hours, times when the schools aren't totally full of students. We're going to require parental notification, required within 24 hours ahead of time, the opportunity for parents to opt their students out of an active shooter drill, and opportunity for parents of students grades 9 to 12 to opt their students into assimilation if they so desire. And we also provide criteria for active shooter drills, such as accessible, developmentally appropriate, culturally aware, trauma-informed, and inclusive. And we also require a post-drill debrief to have conversations with the students to see where they are and provide any support that is needed after going through the drill. Also, one-hour violence prevention training if you decide to do the drills. And then also student, staff, and parental opportunity to weigh in the operation and the efficacy of doing the drills. That concludes my opening remarks. I will stay around, obviously, for questions and discussion, but I do have a testifier here who is a volunteer of the Sandy Hook Collaborative that helped draft this bill and put this together, and I will allow him the opportunity to speak.
Okay. And so the testifier here in person would be the first one that we will tune to.
No, I think we want to go to the individual
on
the virtual
remote
first.
Testimony. Yeah. Yes. All right. Thank you. I do have Calandrian Kemp on remote. If you can hear us, please unmute and identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I am Calandrian Kemp. Thank you, Chair Pryor, Vice Chair Hill, Ranking Minority Member Bennett, and members of the committee. I am Calandrian Simpson Kemp. I come to before you today in my capacity as State Policy Manager for Sandy Hook Promise. On behalf of Sandy Hook Promise, including our more than 37,000 grassroots supporters across Minnesota, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to the value of ensuring our youth feel safe at school. Sandy Hook Promise is a national nonprofit formed and led by several family members whose loved ones were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14, 2012. Sandy Hook Promise is a helping organization. We help students and adults identify the signs and signals of someone at risk of harming themselves or others. Through our Know the Signs suite of programs, we also provide training on what to do next. Our mission is to educate and to empower the youth and provide adults to prevent violence in their schools, homes, and communities. We understand, however, that not all harm is intentional. This is one reason HF 2097 matters to us. When adults go about the important task of designing student safety measures, it is vitally important to keep students' mental health and wellness top of mind. In the context of preparing for potential school shooting, this means that students across differences in age, ability, developmental stage, and life experience need a carefully crafted approach. They deserve such an approach. HF 2097 is rooted in the idea that student safety is neither one size fits all nor a free for all, and it speaks to something that has become a commonplace, active shooter drills. Known by many names, including lockdown drills or intruder drills, active shooter drills are familiar to students. According to the National Center of Education Statistics, 96% of the nation's public schools have written plans for active shooter situations. More than 90% of public schools plan to use lockdown drills during the 22-23 school year alone. Yet, there is not a uniform definition for what an active shooter drill is. This lack of clarity matters. It matters because in the gray area, that space in which active shooter drill means one thing to one person and another to the next, has given life to a harmful concept, active shooter simulation. Drills and simulations are not the same. And yet they are conflated. Conflated even through the American Academy of Pediatrics has called on the nation to, in quote, be cautious about the potential psychological risk of directly involving children in live exercises or drills, end quote. An active shooter simulation mimics aspects of real life shooting, such as having law enforcement sweep the halls with their firearms drawn while a person pretends to be the intruder, pounding on classroom doors and shaking door handles. Because simulations mimic aspects of real-life shootings, they tend to be anxiety-inducing for students and traumatizing. In fact, they are traumatizing by nature. What is the upside for Minnesota? HF 2097 includes a clear definition for active shooter drills and separately one for active shooter simulations. These definitions ensure the two approaches are not interchangeably. They also ensure parents and guardians have a clear understanding of what type of drill their student is and is not undergoing. This is the right thing for parents and guardians, own well-being, and their trust in the school. But the bill does not stop there, and thankfully so. HF 2097 includes reasonable criteria schools can use to ensure active shooter drills do not morph into simulations. The criteria, in line with the recommendations from the National Association of Resource Officers and National Association of School Psychologists. It also exempts students from participating in simulations. This is a necessary choice. After all, students' mental health and wellness should not be sacrificed at the name of safety. In closing, HF 2097 is a piece of legislation that balances student safety with the importance of student mental health and wellness. Sandy Hook Promise thanks Representative Frazier, Udall, Cagle, Spencer Mira, Berg, and Lee for sponsoring this bill and this committee for the opportunity to speak to it. It is our wish for students in Minnesota that they be safe in school and that they feel safe in school. HF 2097 is a clear step in that right direction. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we have John Barden. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Pryor, Vice Chair Hill, Ranking Minority Member Bennett, and members of the committee, my name is John Barden. I've been a resident in Minnesota for over 40 years, and I'm also a grateful supporter of Sandy Hook Promise. You heard Ms. Kemp talk about how and why the Promise was formed. My connection to Sandy Hook Promise is very personal and underlies my reason for being here today. On December 14, 2012, 20 children and 6 adults were killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School. I might add that killed is a word that doesn't begin to describe what took place in that building that day. On that day, the parents of those little children waited desperately in the Family Reunification Center for their child to be brought to them. Among those parents was my cousin, Mark Barden. He and his wife, Jackie, waited for his son, Daniel, to be brought to the center, and they waited in vain. Today, Mark is the co-founder and CEO of Sandy Hook Promise. On that day, however, he was a devastated parent, a person changed forever, and those of us in his extended family have been changed, too, by the realization that we'll never see Daniel again, and by the heartbreak I continue to see on that man's face literally every time I see him. But gun violence continues to be a fact of life for children in America. As a matter of fact, since 2019, it's the leading cause of death for children in this country. Those of us who must process the violent taking of a loved one while simultaneously navigating the long dark shadow school shootings cast can be compelled to find solutions. Decision makers such as yourselves may feel pushed into these scenarios amidst the people's angst and demands. And in turn, this can be when adults rush to create solutions. When it comes to school shootings in particular, the need to hurriedly identify solutions may not be surprising. After all, why would any civil society not create plans designed to respond to mass shootings which target children in their classrooms? However, this rush does not always produce the best outcomes. That is, the things we sometimes label as solutions may not be solutions at all. Sometimes they aren't even the approaches that cause the least amount of inadvertent harm. This undefined thing we know as an active shooter drill is one example of the rush to find a solution. And the fact that it is undefined is what makes HF 2097 so critically important. Society, including here in Minnesota, has accepted the notion that preparing students for the potential of a school shooting is necessary. However, how we prepare the students for the potential of a shooting is vital. And therein lies the problem with something as undefined as an active shooter drill. I've heard, and I'm sure you have too, that people use the phrase active shooter drill and active shooter simulation interchangeably. However, they are not interchangeable and should not be considered the same. The mental health and wellness of students necessitates that the terms be defined and kept distinct. When done correctly, like any emergency preparedness drill, an active shooter drill can help teach students how to respond in the event of an intruder in their classroom. For an active shield to be done, drill to be done correctly, however, deliberate steps must be taken to ensure that it is not traumatizing to students. And at its core, this is what HF 2097 is about. Let's be frank. An active shooter drill, even when done well, is rooted in the idea that students may suffer great harm and, yes, even die in their school. This is one reason why drills should never be unannounced. Conducting active shooter drills without telling students before the drill starts that it's just a drill is irresponsible. Given what underlies these drills, the possibility of a school shooting, the surprise factor is not helpful. Simply put, it can never be helpful to spring the idea of imminent death on children. But this is not just my personal opinion. According to the Academy of American Pediatrics, when it comes to preparing students for an active shooter situation, the likelihood of trauma is even greater when, quote, children are deceived so that they believe there's an actual attack, unquote. Something else that's traumatizing to students, active shooter simulations. Because they mimic aspects of a real-life shooting, it is fair to say that active simulations go too far. After all, there's no way to mimic a real-life shooting without traumatizing students in the process. By exempting students from simulations, HF 2097 decreases the likelihood that students will be traumatized in the name of safety. In turn, this is one reason why Minnesota students need HF 27 right now. This bill balances the sad realities of gun violence and the possibility that it can happen in our schools with the urgent need to protect students' mental health and wellness. While the nation may have a long way to go before we end gun violence, when it comes to ensuring the safety of our students, this bill is a solid step in the right direction. I just might add, as enduring and intractable a problem as gun violence seems to be in this country, it can be tempting to slide into feelings of fatalism. What former Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan used to call defining deviancy down, which is to say that the feeling that's just the way it is in this country. But gun violence and especially school shootings are not a problem to be endured. They're a problem to be overcome. I think all of us are very grateful for the Minnesota legislators who have worked tirelessly around this issue, but it's pretty clear that there's more work to do. HF 2097 is a critical and very sensible contribution to this process. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. Member discussion, Representative Ergo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Fraser. First of all, a little known fact and then a little history. I was a chief author of the current safety drill legislation in Minnesota. And it came about from my teaching experiences where our drills were done. The current law at that time was that we would do a drill in our workshops before school started for the school year without students. That evolved into one drill a school year, then you could have students or not. And then we had Columbine and other tragic events. And, I determined as a legislator then that students just didn't know what to do. I asked students in it was a church dinner. I said to the young people, so what would you do if a shooter came into your lunchroom? And they said, scream and dive under the tables, which is what happened at Columbine. And so we developed a legislation here that would provide for 5 drills a year with students, the intent being that that drill would be at various times of the day, of the school day, and in various sites in the school. If it's always the same time and the same place, students aren't learning how to react. And for those who said that they don't need this, again, without it, I felt a very dangerous situation where students simply wouldn't know what to do. And so that's why I appreciate this taking another step and getting into, okay, what do you do if there, is an active shooter? How do you react? And making it more real, I think, is an important step in doing that. But I just have a couple of questions. And when we developed this bill in the past, there was a concern over the age of students, particularly younger students, being able to handle this type of situation. And so what type of preparations would be made to deal with various age groups? Representative Fraser.
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. Thank you for the history. I didn't know that you were the author of the bill that got us to this point. Thank you for that. The language calls for age appropriate for implementing these drills or dissimulations as well. And so based on that, we're going to rely on the local school district to ensure they're putting something in place that has the data that backs up that it would be the best practice for whatever age they are to implement the drills.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fraser. In my experience in working with people on this, the suggestion was that younger students, as well as others, you know, need to know what to expect and to be prepared for this. And I would imagine younger kids maybe need a little more preparation than older, but that's important. Who is going to be doing the training of the teachers so that they can instruct and how to handle this?
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. We are requiring that MDE provides a list of activities or providers or vendors, and I would imagine that those vendors would then be doing the training for the staff that will be providing the drills. And I do have someone from MDE here if they'd like to speak more to that.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Fraser, for bringing this forward. I know that we always talk about schools that are outside of Minnesota. And I want to remind us that on March 21st, 2005, there was a school shooting in Red Lake that 10 people died. And now we have their next generations in the schools. And so these active shooter drills not only create an anxiety in the moment, but there is historical connection to that. And so my question is around the student mental health and wellness piece of it. One suggestion I would add is that in here it says that students must have access to mental health services on campus, including counselors, school psychologists, social workers. I would add cultural liaisons because we talk a lot about being culturally aware and culturally responsive, that in some schools, we, especially Indian education liaisons, I think making sure that they're part of that follow-up will be really important. But I'm interested to see what does that look like, because I know when I came from my district, we would do these drills, get everybody back in school, and then we had to turn around and get them on buses within 10 minutes. And so it wasn't really a conversation, and then anxiety was high on buses. We would see more behavior there as we send them home because we didn't really work through the emotions. So, if we're going to be saying that we do these drills and then we have to have the time, what is a significant amount of time? So we're not doing these then at the end of the school day, and is that age appropriate to take into consideration? Because littles might need more than 10 minutes to walk through this.
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler, and thank you for reminding us about the Red Lake shooting. I do remember when it happened. It was tragic, of course. So those pieces, the bill does require that MDE provide some information for districts to pull from in order to use for the particular drills. And I think you're right, just as Representative Erdahl was right, for our young ones, it's going to take a little bit more time to prepare them and get them ready to go through these drills so they understand what's happening and actually learn from this. If my testifier wants to add anything, you can, or if MDE would like to come up, and also with the testifier that's online, if they'd like to share any more background on that, I would allow them to, but I think you're absolutely right. For our little ones, we have to make sure that we're preparing something that is age appropriate and also culturally appropriate to ensure that we're reaching them as best way possible.
Yeah, I can add to that.
Representative Joaquin. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you think? Okay, Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, and I just want to thank Representative Fraser for bringing this forward. And I think with the removal of subdivision 7, I'm not sure it has to go to Ed Finance, but we might as well send it there just in case. But I like the idea of training the teachers better.
Mm.
Because frankly, no matter the amount of drills and training we do, no one's going to be really prepared for this. Mm-hmm. And I also know from the local control aspect, having worked in schools, we have 5 fire drills, which are really important as well, because a lot of kids don't get that fire prevention at home. But having those 5 fire drills and 5 active shooter drills stacked on top of each other, you start taking away a lot of class time. So maybe the discussion next year can maybe be about pairing at least one of those back a little bit. And I just want to also kind of echo the trauma piece of it. So I've only been working in schools for about 8 years now, but a variety of different levels. And every time we did an active shooter drill, it did not matter how old the kids were, this really affected them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be when I was working in the high school and had to do a lockdown drill during study hall, and you'd hear the kids try to kind of make jokes to cover up their fear, and then actually having somebody pound on the door because they got stuck in the hallway, and having kids really freak out. To sitting with kindergartners huddled underneath a table, and trying to, get them to stay calm and quiet and not make it a big deal so it was more age appropriate, to also later elementary age being stuck in the back room of a library because we had been in library time with one of the kiddos I was working with who due to their special needs could not stay quiet, and having all the students around them, anxiety go up, and having kids say, "Be quiet, the bad guy's going to find us." So anything we can do to help these drills that I guess have become, I don't even want to say it's a necessity, because I firmly believe it really is the adults that need to be trained on how to do those drills. And then, we can briefly teach the kids, but 5 is just a little too much, I think, for any age. But the more training that we can do for the adults and then the resources after. The one time I actually saw and they don't talk about shooters all the time. When we brief the kids or talk to the kids, it's just about if somebody gets into the school that's not supposed to be there. So that's part of the, like, age appropriateness.
Yeah.
But I was at a junior high, a middle school, and a drill happened, and it was in a social studies class. And after the drill got done, the teacher just stopped teaching and just said, "Hey, we just had this drill. I want to check in and see. You guys have any questions? How are you feeling about it?" Which was a great way to kind of incorporate how they were feeling and their thoughts. But it's also taking away from teaching time. So there's that push and pull. So thank you for this. And as we move forward, maybe we can refine a little bit or continue discussion into next year about, like, how many do we need. But absolutely, I'm a firm believer that if it's going to be an active shooter drill with officers in the building, mm-hmm. it cannot be during the regular school hours. And our police chief has, when I've been working with them, have said that too. They can do those simulations without students in the building and be perfectly prepared to respond. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
And we have Representative Hill.
Not to over make the point, but our students deserve this, and I really appreciate you bringing this bill forward, this important topic, having worked with 12th graders and watching them adapt to a place where every time we had a drill, all the heads would turn towards the teacher, that being me, and say, "Did you know about this?" And what that means is, was this planned? Okay. Having been in a kindergarten classroom and watching that hero, that master teacher, address this element in this experience with the kids, it became very clear to me that our students shouldn't be at the mercy of having an incredibly talented entity that happened to be with them at that moment. We need to provide training. We need to provide best practices and make sure that everybody's up to speed so that our kids get what they need. So thank you for making this front and center today.
Thank you.
Representative Mueller. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier. I did have a meeting during the snowstorm with Sandy Hook, which was fantastic. I do want to echo what many of you have already said. I was a teacher for almost 20 years, and we did have one report come in, and we shared it with the school, and many of my students didn't come that day. I had maybe classes that were normally 30 to maybe 5 or 6 students that chose to come that day. And I remember calling my parents and my husband, just letting them know, you know, to what Chair Joachim said, you know, it's just as hard on teachers as well. You know, we know what our responsibility is, and we know what we would do for our students, and that's a heavy weight. And so it's good to have training, and it's good for us to have options. And so thank you.
Representative Frazier, your closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for a good discussion and for all your thoughtful, sincere comments. I think that this is the world we live in, and unfortunately, it's commonplace that we have to do these drills. But I always think the work that we do here as legislators, but also when I step outside, I'm a parent. And for me, it's always how can I do things better and make sure things are better for not only my kids, but also their peers and for the next generation. So appreciate your support. We'll keep working on it to make it better and refine it from the comments that were made. But let's keep it moving and get this into law.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Members, out of abundance of caution to make sure that we are, if there is any financial aspect of this, we will send it to Education Finance, but it may very well be a bill without financial impact, and that works for us too. So all in favor of, so Representative Frazier renews his motion to re-refer House File 2097 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the motion carries, and House File 2097, as amended, is on its way to Education Finance. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Thank you also to our testifiers today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And that was one of the most picturesque remote testifiers we've had, so we appreciate you being with us today. All right, next up, we do have Representative Freiberg. Yes, Freiberg. And House File 160.
No, I'm saying, do you have to
see me? Oh, yes. Give me a second to get situated. I would appreciate
we'll let you, we'll let you get set up, and I actually will call on Representative Freiberg. It's not a member of our committee, so Chair Joachim, would you move House File 160 before us to be referred to the Education Finance Committee?
Yes, I'll move House File 160 to be referred to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. And I don't see no amendments, right? Okay. All right. Well, Representative Freiberg, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and introduce your bill.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm State Representative Mike Freiberg. House File 160 is a bill which is designed to more fully integrate service learning into our education system. Passage of this bill will create greater opportunity and success for young people throughout Minnesota in their college, career, and community life. At the same time, it will lead to positive community contributions tied to academic standards and build the aspirations of children and youth. This bill emphasizes the role of young people as active learners and leaders. It encourages the building of relationships and social-emotional skills. Our journey in the development of this bill began as early as 2013 when we met with various stakeholders. In 2014, meetings of education and community leaders, including students, were convened at the Capitol to discuss related topics and begin the process of moving forward. Early in the refinement of the service learning bill, Paula Bugin, who's here and will speak next, and I met with a group of local youth to learn their views about the bill. In addition, a previous Minnesota Youth Council heard and unanimously passed the service learning bill. Since that time, more feedback from a variety of stakeholders has been woven into the bill, and the result is the bill we are presenting today. According to the Minnesota Department of Education website, service learning is a form of experiential learning whereby students apply content, knowledge, critical thinking, and good judgment to address genuine community needs. Let's acknowledge and support the power and potential of our children and youth and provide them with opportunities they deserve and need in order to maximize their success. With me to present today are Paula Bugin from Reinvigorating the Conversation, who has years of experience in this field, and Sage Hartman, 11th grade, who will briefly share her perspective about the bill. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Paula, I'm sorry, I just heard your name, and Bugin. Yes, if you can introduce yourself again.
Thank you. Chair Pryor, committee members, my name is Paula Bugin. I am the founder of Reinvigorating the Conversation, a network of leaders working to advance volunteerism, service learning, and community engagement. Among other roles in the past, earlier part of my career, I served 3 terms on the Robbinsdale Area School Board. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 160, Service Learning. House File 160 is our opportunity to create a brighter, more hopeful future together with Minnesota students. The bill emphasizes that children and youth learn so much about the world and what they need to know academically when they learn by doing and have a voice and how to go about it. With passage, it will demonstrate how valuable students are as contributors to their communities, and it will transform many lives. The partnerships that are a part of the bill will help students build relationships and social capital. Students getting ready for post-secondary education and or employment are likely to have networks, role models, and recommendations to help them achieve their goals. Through passage of this bill, we will discover and advance and spread high-quality service learning aligned with Minnesota's world's best workforce goals, or the plan submitted and approved under the recent reauthorization of ESEA and local or state academic standards. Students will experience a sense of real-world accomplishment. We need to draw out and build upon the strengths and passions of all of our students and attract more students to stay engaged in school. Consider the following thoughts. I know firsthand that students share. With a sense of being astounded, quote, "The children I work with looked up to me. No one has ever looked up to me before," unquote. New quote, new student. "I realize that other people's lives are even harder than my own. I can do something about that," quote. From a student facing immense challenges who reflected on an earlier lack of motivation to learn, quote, "I found out that I can make a difference, and it made me want to work harder in school," unquote. By a student who thinks school is boring, "I like service learning especially because it's hard for me to sit still in school, and I learn better by doing things," unquote. After surmounting life challenges and disengagement, another student, "I want to be a teacher," or you can fill in the blank because the students say different things. "I want to be a teacher now," unquote. These are only a few of the types of statements young people have shared with me when we have discussed their service learning experiences. Service learning is a journey to hope, opportunity, and academic achievement for many. Time and again, I encounter youth who have begun to discover their own human potential through service learning while better understanding the relevance of their studies and the importance of getting a quality education. Your support for House File 160 Service Learning will make a huge difference in the lives of many. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Sage Hartman.
I'd like to thank the chair and committee members today for hearing House File 160. My name is Sage Hartman. I'm the Mental Health and Well-Being and Congressional District 3 Chair for the Minnesota Youth Council. Learning in school has been something I've struggled with ever since I was little. Understanding concepts has always taken me longer. My learning style is hands-on learning. Unfortunately, in most of my classes, this hasn't been an option. That's why I'm urging you to pass this bill. Service learning allows students to learn in a hands-on way that not only helps their community, but helps students learn and grow. Students thrive when given access to materials that fit their learning style. This bill allows students to expand their knowledge in a way that makes school feel interactive, exciting, and meaningful. Service learning has changed my outlook and perspective in a positive way. Ever since I was young, I've cared about my community. Service learning allowed me to get involved and help expand my knowledge while helping others. Unfortunately, most of the service learning-based activities I've experienced in have been after school, therefore creating a gap in access. Some students don't have transportation or time to participate after school. emphasizing why service learning taking place during the school day is so crucial. Overall, this bill would help students stay engaged in the curriculum and their community. This bill can provide hope for students and classmates like me, for people who are seeking an interactive and personable way of learning. All in all, I'm urging you to pass and support this bill for the future of students in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have no more testifiers, so we're open for member questions and discussions. We'll go with Representative Bakeberg first. This is because this is the first we've heard with you from this committee, so and for this particular meeting, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel like that was kind of a shot that I'm normally not quiet. I'm just joking. So, Representative Freiberg, I just want to thank you for the bill. I think any type of opportunities where we are changing some of the mindset and kind of that sit and get factory model to, you know, as Ms. Hartman talked about, you did a fantastic job in your testimony, but just how we're meeting the needs of kids and their different learning styles is fantastic. And I think we should continue to blow the doors open on that. To be very, very transparent, I think we have opportunities within statute already to do this. And I would prefer that we not add more because, like I testified earlier, I didn't even know about some of the statutes and I've been a principal for years. So I think refining the things that we currently have versus adding more. And as I previously talked about, you know, the only concern I really have with this bill is adding another position to MDE and potentially another person to say no to schools when they try to do innovative programs. So I love the concept, fantastic concept. I think we can do a lot of it within statute already, and if we can't, let's identify that and let's open it up so our schools can innovate. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg, do you have a comment or a response?
Thank you for those comments, Representative Bakeberg. Really appreciate knowing of your support for this style of learning. I do think greater investment in it will pay dividends to us in terms of just preparing our students like Ms. Hartman for the future. In terms of adding a position, I know maybe Paula Bugin can talk about this too, but I do know that this isn't a new concept. There was a position for a number of years at the Department of Education looking at this, and I believe some federal funding was lost, and then and that position was eliminated, so this would bring that back and kind of reinvigorate the attention focused on service learning.
Mm-hmm. Further comments?
Chair yes. Pryor, members of the committee. I'm just thinking for one second. This is a very important position. A lot of teachers are not familiar with the body of knowledge about service learning. So this money that goes to the Department of Ed is not only for the position, but it's also for staff development, professional development, working with community-based organizations, working to make sure that we evaluate and that we continue to build the evidence of the efficacy of how what we are doing and working with young people in service learning ties to academic standards specifically to see that we are making a having a result on the achievement of the students as a result of learning through this way. So if we're going to innovate in education, and education is certainly changing now just because of the world environment, everything that's going on around us, we really need to be able to build out our expertise and our implementation and tie it to academic standards. And that's a very important part of this that has not been as specifically emphasized in other efforts. But we have lost funding across the nation. And so we have gone backwards in terms of the support systems that are in place. So there's the money for the position that's grant administration, but there is also money for some of these other things that either can be done by the department or contracted out, and that will help us build our expertise. We need to do this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Freiberg or Ms. Buchan, maybe. Could you just give us a brief example of what a service learning lesson might look like? I think I have an idea. We've talked about it before, but just want a refresher.
Well, the thing about this, Chair Pryor, Chair Youakim. Youakim, little protocol here. This whole design here is a student design, student-led, and involves partnerships. And so it must be tied, it's very specific in the bill, that it must be tied to academic standard or standards. But we want it to be student-driven, where they have some role in their own learning that is something that they need to learn anyway and is learned in an active way. But I would just make one comment. I have a YouTube video, doesn't happen to be from Minnesota, of a 7-year-old who is educating adults on brain science for children up to age 5. And it is pretty amazing what young people can do if we give them the opportunity to learn, to apply, and to lead. So thank you very much.
Representative Mueller, any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair Pryor and Representative Freiberg. I do actually have a question. So as I've said before, you know, been a teacher for a long time, done lots of active service learning as well. One of my favorite activities is as we were teaching about how to do paragraphs of, you know, problem solution and cause and effect, and how to do citations and all those things, my students created a 5-minute documentary that would bring awareness to an issue. So I'm very versed in that, very versed in Gardner's differentiation and all those different ways of teaching. And so I guess my question, Representative Freiberg, is what in statute prevents our teachers from doing this already?
Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I haven't reviewed all of the statutes. You know, I think it's probably a resource question. And, you know, I think as legislators, we, you know, do have the ability to provide some guidance and develop new programs. You know, I think the evidence in terms of the value of service learning is very clear. And I think, you know, saying specifically that this is what we'd like schools and students to have the opportunity to do, and providing some resources to do it is a good thing and a good use of legislation.
And follow up, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you. As a matter of fact, as I was looking at it, we already have almost all of these things in statute. All of these things that you're talking about, we already can do in statute. It's a matter of making sure that we have our, as we talked about from Representative Bakeberg, you know, these type of options are already listed in statutes. Project-based learning, accelerated learning, CTE, Montessori schools, work-based schools, place-based learning, all of this is already in statute. The whole thing is already there. And so, what I'm concerned with is not the money that we're giving to our schools. That's fantastic. I think that's great that we can give it straight to our local schools to be able to implement some of these things that are already in statute. Don't find a need to create more statute that's already there. My question is, how come we need $300,000 for a person for MDE?
And I think at this point we'll go to, we'll give Representative Freiberg his response, and then we'll go to Representative Freiberg's closing comments.
Thank you. I do think, as I mentioned before, there used to be a position at MTE to provide technical assistance, and I do think it's really important. You know, it's great to hear that there are teachers here who have experience in this area. You know, not every teacher has worked on a service learning project, so having staff with this expertise, like we had in the past, who can provide guidance on how service learning projects can operate, I think will be extremely beneficial. Paula Bugin looked like she might have had some additional comments too.
Responding to Representative Mueller's question. Ms. Bergen.
Briefly. Thank you, Chair Pryor. This is a grant program, and that needs to be administered. And then we have these other areas that we talked about where we're trying to build out the body of knowledge and the efficacy of how we're going about it so that we can get to academic results that are tied to standards and see if we can bump up the achievement, keeping young people, this is illustration, and so forth. Also, there's a part of the community-based partners that have been greatly neglected across the state who have to invest their own energies and resources in order some of these more substantive service learning experiences to make them work effectively. And so it's much broader than I think what we're generally seeing implemented. Service learning specialists across the country have also fell down when that federal money went away. And so we have lost a lot of the infrastructure that has been in place.
I think we still have one more bill today. Closing comments, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and members of the committee for the good discussion. I think the benefit to students is clear, and you know we've, as Ms. Bugin said, we've gone backwards the last few years in terms of service learning and our capacity to provide it. So this bill will constitute a reinvestment in that area, and I think it's a really important one, and hope members will look favorably on it. So thank you for your time.
All right, and as we said before, this is moving to education finance, where we can discuss more of those education aspects of this particular bill. But we appreciate our testifiers today. And perhaps we'll see you again.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, Representative Joachim renews her motion to re-refer House File 160 to the Education Finance Committee. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carries. And House File 160 is heading to Education Finance. Thank you. All right. Next up, we have Representative Kraft visiting our committee for the first time with House File 2297. All right, we'll let you get settled in there, and if you have a testifier that is going to be up next or up soon, you can certainly bring that group up.
The first two people.
Mm-hmm. And we've got two additional chairs up there, and then there's two chairs on the side, too. Welcome, Representative Kraft. Representative Keeler, would you like to move motion House File 2297 before the committee? And we know that this is a pretty substantial bill and with many, many policy implications that we're not sure that we could get to. So our motion is going to be lay it over in the Education Policy Committee for this time. That was a discussion that we had this morning. So sorry. I know there are financial aspects to this, and as for the bill to go forward, it would also go to education finance, but for this meeting, we're going to be laying it over. So thank you. All right. So Representative Keeler, would you please motion House File 2297 before the committee to be laid over for further consideration?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House File 2297 be moved before us.
All right. Thank you, Representative Keeler. All right, Representative Kraft, we are looking forward to your presentation. Please introduce yourself and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Larry Kraft, I'm so excited to be presenting House File 2297 to you all today because this bill came from young people. And especially when it comes to climate change, it is young people's future we're talking about. Their voices need to be heard and should carry a lot of weight. What this bill does is pretty simple, directs the Department of Education to create a model program around climate justice, and then requires districts to incorporate that model program. It directs that the program be factually based and that it must be scientifically accurate, and needs to incorporate that climate change impacts have fallen and will continue to fall disproportionately on the more disadvantaged among us. It's important to point out that with this bill, districts have complete flexibility in determining in which grade or grades it works best for them to include the program, and even how long the program is. So with that, I want to turn it over to my testifiers and have them tell the story. I think they'll do it far more effectively than I can.
Thank you. First on my list is Amal Mohammed.
Good afternoon, Chair Pryor and members of the Education Policy Committee. My name is Emma Mohammed, and I'm a senior as well as president of Earth Club at Jefferson High School in Bloomington, Minnesota. 2 weeks ago, I organized a climate cafe chat at my school where I asked over 150 students what they wanted to see environmentally change at Jefferson High School. The first most common answer was actually learning about climate change in our educational curriculum. Education is power, but the first time I learned about climate change wasn't in school. The first time I learned about it was the first time I experienced it. And after experiencing climate change and therefore learning about it, I realized educating others about climate change needed to happen now more than ever. Learning about climate change changed my life, and I know it has the power to change others too. So in 2021, I presented to the staff of my school why climate change deserves to be a part of our curriculum, along with a comprehensive guide with over 60 resources on how they could integrate it into their corresponding classes. I was applauded by the staff for my presentation, but it's now been 2 years later, and still no changes have been made. Changes must be made because students want to learn about climate change. The ED Week Research Center surveyed a nationally representative sample of 1,055 teenagers in October 2022. 65% of the students responding said they want to learn more about how climate change will affect the future of Earth and society. When we educate the student population about climate change, it empowers them to develop a strong personal connection to finding climate solutions. We must not pass on the opportunity to educate students to prioritize the current climate crisis. So even if you don't believe in climate change, please believe in your students' voices and pass House File 2297.
Thank you. Next up, Tom Lloyd.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tom Lloyd. I am a senior at Jefferson High School in Bloomington and a youth organizer at Climate Generation. I am testifying today because I'm excited to support the climate justice education bill you are all working on. I grew up hearing of my grandmother's conquests, how she would run around to her city in order to save her house from floods, her knack of MacGyvering fans to full speed to beat back heat waves, and her secret herbal remedies to cure coughs caused by air pollution. Her stories taught me to never underestimate the powers of nature. But sitting in my seventh grade biology class as my teacher talked about the ozone layer and the endangered polar bears, I got something my grandmother never got. I learned about climate change for the first time. I realized that it was us that had made nature this way. We had made the oceans rise and the sun become violent. But what hit me the most was we could also change it. For people like me whose parents and grandparents haven't had the ability to learn about climate change, it can be life-changing. My climate education gave me the knowledge I needed to start addressing the issues I was seeing firsthand in the world. It allowed me to contextualize the polar vortexes and prolonged heat waves I was experiencing. It empowered me to join Climate Generation and start advocating for those most affected by climate change. People like my grandmother, who now talks about climate change, and not in the future tense, but in the present tense. This bill will focus on empowering the next generation to take action. Centering climate justice education, stories like my grandmother's will allow future Minnesotans to understand the disproportionate effects of climate change. It will equip them with the tools to reflect upon the practices that led us this way, galvanizing them to create the equitable and sustainable society they deserve. I know the impact climate justice education can have because I lived it. It's a reason why I'm here today advocating for climate justice. Empower the next generation of Minnesotans to do the same. Please pass this bill.
Thank you. Next up, I have Libby Kramer, and then Rakia Sheikh-Hosman would be after that. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, I'm Libby Kramer. I'm a senior at Southwest High School in Minneapolis, and I use she, her pronouns. I'm a member of YA Network, and I've been working with this organization for 3 years now. Climate justice education is important to me because of the strength and value of powerful youth voices. I have worked on the climate justice education bill since its first introduction, and I have seen how climate education has empowered youth and supported them in using their voices. I myself have developed a voice to advocate for climate justice And from my experience, I believe more young people would find their voice with the resources provided by our bill. When young people have access to accurate information about climate justice, they are inspired and empowered to use their voices. Youth are so important in the solution to climate change. We are the future of our society and the people who will live with the consequences. So it is crucial that we have access to accurate information on the issue. I believe young people are the future and deserve climate education. Schools should prepare young people for the rest of their lives, but it isn't doing that without comprehensive climate justice curriculum. Thank you.
Thank you. Rakia Cheek-Hosman, please.
She is running a little late,
okay.
And actually, here we are.
Oh, perfect timing.
Perfect time.
All right. Get settled in. And then when you're ready and feel comfortable, please introduce yourself and proceed. And catch your breath. And it is amazing. Or do you want to change orders? Or
no, I'm okay.
You're good? Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Rakia Sheikh-Osman. I live in Brooklyn Park, and I'm a youth environmental activist at Climate Generation. For the past couple of years in Edina High School, I've been excited to take one of the most popular classes at my school, AP Environmental Science. However, after I asked my friends who was already taking the class about it, she had said that she had found it to be stressful. Now, that was no surprise. Most of the student body is stressed because of school. But what I couldn't understand was that she said it was not the homework that had pushed her out of the class, but the content. According to Harvard Health, 2/3 of Americans experience climate anxiety. Often what pushes people away from environmental understanding is the emotional distress that causes those learning about it. Most media tells us about how many years we have left to change things and how we are ruining the lives of animals and the environment and how we are basically doomed. However, this portrayal is exceptionally harmful, and rather than motivating, it leaves people distraught and hopeless about climate change. The difference between this bill and how climate change is normally taught in schools is that this program would be geared towards climate justice, on solutions to climate change. Focusing on solutions to climate change will empower young people to take action and make a positive impact on the world. Because when students can learn about solutions to climate change, such as renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, and green transportation, those students can really see that there are tangible ways that they themselves can make a difference to the destruction caused by climate change. By giving teachers the chance to shed a new perspective on climate change, one that gives people confidence and for the glowing populace, you will be igniting a flame of creativity and ingenuity that can save our planet and our future. As a high school student who sees the potential in all of my classmates every day to protect their planet, I support the passing of the SF-476 bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad you made it. We wouldn't want to miss that testimony. Thank you. Finally, I have Ramiro Vasquez.
Thank you. Bonjour. Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Romero Vasquez Jr., and I'm the Youth Program Manager at Climate Generation, whose main mission is to sustain and ignite the ability of educators, young people, and communities to act on systems perpetuating the climate crisis. I have the honor today of supporting the high school leaders who wrote and stewarded this bill since its first iteration in 2020, and collaborating directly with our educator network to bring climate justice education into the classroom. I'm a youth advocate of 14 years, alumni of Thomas Alva Edison High School and MPS, and a longtime educator. This generation will feel the direct effects of climate change more than any other. So it is critical they have opportunities to study and understand the crisis. We, the adults in positions of power and decision-making, bear the responsibility of making those opportunities accessible for our children. A key component of public education is to equip students with knowledge and skills required to be active participants in shaping the future. Climate justice education is a necessary requirement to ensure that all students, regardless of race, color, or creed, have the same learning opportunities like they do with all currently required subjects. Efforts to build the true green economy will only begin with young people inspired to pursue new career paths. Comprehensive climate justice education is a step toward strengthening the future of Minnesota's green energy economy, and it will create trained, passionate candidates for the jobs needed to support implementation of legislation, like the 100% bill now signed into law. Minnesota has always been a national leader on climate change and education. Somehow, states like New Jersey, Washington, and Maine have instituted statewide climate change education legislation over the past few years and before us. Submitted as a written testimony is a letter of support for this bill that comes from the scientific and science education community, climate and energy policy coalitions, and most importantly, from these young people. We have an obligation to listen to our students who are demanding comprehensive, justice-based climate change education for the future and the future of Minnesota's green workforce. Miigwech. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we have no more testifiers, so we will turn to member discussion. Representative Erdl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was waiting to see if somebody else wanted to go first. I just have a few questions. First, let's turn to the program, Representative Kraft. And, okay, it's not a course, not a class, but a program. What does that mean?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A model program, so information that can be used to build into a curriculum where a district sees fit. That would meet there's a listed set of criteria for it to include, but it would be to create a unit or materials that can form a, be brought into, put into a curriculum somewhere.
Representative Erdogan.
Okay, how would this be administered? I mean, is it a weekly, quarterly, yearly, daily? What do you envision?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, I don't envision, I'm leaving this up to the bill would leave it up to the school district to determine the best method for doing it. And then there's a reporting afterwards that asks them to tell how they've done it.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Kraft. So you're leaving it up to the local school districts to decide. So one could have it every day and one could have it once a year. Is that what you're saying?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, well, I think having it every day might, I can't imagine someone doing that, but it is, this does leave the control up to the district to figure out how best to integrate it within their schedule and their curriculum.
Representative Erlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that answers my questions. It's kind of an open-ended program you're looking at here.
All right, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft, and more. Thank you, students. I think in an education setting, you know, we often say, you know, it's this top-down approach, like our administrators, our state tells our administrators what to do, our administrators oversee the teachers. The one thing I love is when students come and tell us what they actively want to learn and what they want to utilize that for in the future. As an Indigenous person, we believe that Unchimaka is a relative of ours, and I appreciate that you all are deciding to take it into your own hands to protect our relatives. And so I just want to point that out, that in this space, it is really beautiful to see what our next generations really believe is important in education. So thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you, and I encourage your continued advocacy.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to thank the students and Rep. Kraft for bringing this bill before us. I actually wanted to speak, and what I have to share my answer, Rep. Erdahl's question. I actually really fortunate to be able to go to an elementary school and then junior high and high school that had a service learning program that had recycling as part of the curriculum. And so we learned climate justice, but also did it as part of service learning, and we also learned how to compost. And so I really appreciate kind of like the open-endedness of this and the ability to say, you know, we could combine a lot of things into what climate justice means. Also want to put in a plug that as the representative for a district that has disproportionately high rates of childhood asthma, this is really important because if our children in the cities will be affected by this, they deserve to know how to also solve it. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Berg.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this bill, and thank you, students, for having the courage to come here and talk about this to a room full of adults you don't know, and for the courage to prioritize this unapologetically to all of us. Just one sort of idea that I wanted to bring forward is that this might seem like a strange thing to weave into curriculum. This might seem like something we're not used to seeing, and is it worth like upending how we do work in our classrooms to incorporate this? And I think one of the pieces that needs to be said out loud is that the world is changing, so therefore school is changing, so therefore education is changing, and how we do it, which is exciting and which is a really good thing to reach students. We listened to them talk about how inspired they were, and I'm not particularly saying these students, but often there are students that are struggling that aren't inspired by anything. And then something comes along and it just clicks, and all of a sudden they're reading and they're paying attention and they're excited and they're involved. And so before we kind of make a judgment about whether something like this fits or doesn't fit into curriculum or into a program, let's just think for a moment that we're out of time. This subject is what they're dealing with. This is what we have left them, is the state the planet is in, or as Rep. Keeler said, our relative is in. And so this is the solution. This is innovation, and this is what education is going to look like moving forward. So thank you, students.
Representative Knudsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, testifiers. You did a great job. It's always great to hear from kids. I guess Representative Lee kind of answered my question, I think, already, but what is, again, in statute that's preventing schools from doing this already?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. There's nothing that's preventing folks from doing it now in statute. What may be preventing some from doing it is access to curriculum, materials, ideas of how to do things. That may be one thing that's preventing them. So nothing preventing them, but this certainly would enable it to happen much more broadly with tools that are very usable for districts.
And I believe, Representative Lee, did you want to put that in context, what your comment was?
Sure. Oh, happy to answer, and I thought it might be helpful. So in our school district, we had a really good service learning program, actually, but because funding was cut, the coordinator for the school district lost her job, and you know, we didn't continue the program. And then, I mean, I'd say also, you know, it's a resource question, right? She had a wealth of institutional knowledge that just, you know, wasn't continued. So, I mean, this is why, like, you know, this is where we as legislators, right, can put our money where our mouth is and like make value-based judgments here that, you know, we do want to support climate change education or service learning programs. So.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for that clarification of what was happening in your school, but that came up. And did you have follow-up, Representative Knudsen? You're good? Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Students, fantastic job to come before a group of adults and present something that you're passionate about. You guys did a fantastic job. You've obviously well-researched it. You're very articulate. And for you coming running up those stairs to be able to get yourself to present, great job. Representative Kraft, I want to have a clarifying question. So is a district, so you had said earlier that a district would determine, you know, how they would do this. If this would pass, does the district say, could a local school board say, nope, we're going to stick with the standards that are already established in both eighth and ninth grade. We're going to teach the standards. We're not going to take it further and reference what's in here. Does the district have that option?
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Representative Bakeberg. So the bill language requires that districts implement the model program somewhere in elementary, secondary education. So it doesn't require that it's implemented, in my read, in eighth or ninth grade.
Representative Bakeford, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's the concern that I have, is we're already addressing this topic in both eighth and ninth grade in the current science standards that were recently adopted. And I'm just going to name what maybe is some are thinking. I'm going to name what administrators have reached out to me and teachers have reached out. Some of the language in this bill, climate justice, is going to frustrate different members of different communities. What was said to me is, why are we pushing a political perspective, a political agenda? And I don't want to get into a debate about things, but that's a reality. And when we legislate things and we mandate schools that they have to adopt a program, we are putting school districts, we are putting teachers in a position where they are going to have difficult conversations. So we already have things in standards. We already have this in our eighth grade standards, in our ninth grade standards. Local districts have the ability to go further if they choose, if they have a group of students who come and present to a school board. That's fantastic. We want to empower our kids, but to mandate something is just not something that I can support. These types of mandates, and then the results of people having to defend our decisions at the local level, that's one of the reasons we have a workforce issue in education. That's one of the reasons people are leaving. I had a principal tell me yesterday, when I was talking to him about this and other things, then I'm just done. I'm done. I don't want to be the political pawn in all of these things. So with that, great job to the kids, to the students. You guys have a bright future, but I can't support this type of a mandate.
Representative Ewa King.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing forward this discussion. I think it's important, and I resonated with some of the students that said they didn't learn this until they took AP Environmental Science. As a parent, that is when I learned my most, was when my students, my kids, took AP Environmental Science, and it really hit home because they became so passionate about it. Unfortunately, that wasn't until 11th grade. I had learned in ECFE classes, we had one parent that was very actively engaged in changing cleaning supplies and helping the environment, and that overwhelmed me, and I was like, I don't know if I can do all this. So I think as adults, sometimes we're slower to change. We're slower to change because it frightens us, it overwhelms us, and the magnitude of it might be too much, but we sometimes have to turn to our youth to help push us along and create that change. It always seems to be that next generation that comes in. And I think this still needs some work in how we can fit it in, because the standards for eighth and ninth, which I'm glad they brought it down to eighth and ninth, has some of that in there, but just it intrigues me to have different types of models that folks can look at to bring that down into the elementary school too. Because I think it is a learning process that starts and grows, and we all should be a little bit more with lifelong learners, and I sure wish my kids would have gotten something like that earlier to help push me to the point where we are now with composting and still trying to do more than what we are. But that was roundabout of just saying, like, thank you, keep working on it, let's keep working on it together, because I think this is one of those areas that can be baked in to all of our different grade levels at different ways. And maybe it's just that resource piece for districts to have to know where they can go to get it.
Thank you, Representative Ewa King. Representative Euler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kraft for bringing the bell forward. And students, I was a teacher for a long time and was always proud of my kiddos when they went and did something out of their comfort zone and something authentic like this. So good job and thank you for that. I'm just going to wrap up kind of the comments from this side and just, you know, much of this language is, as Representative Erdahl talked about, seems a little vague. Not saying that we want to leave it, we want to leave it to the local school, but having a program, not quite sure what that looks like. Knowing that our science standards that were just adopted does address this means that we already, and as Representative Knutson says, it does not prevent us. You know, we are not prevented from adding this. We did receive letters from MREA and MSBA, AMSD that talked about how whenever we mandate something extra, it takes away from some of the things that they've already that they're already doing. They said high school students already have to complete all these credits to graduate, and it makes it very difficult when we start mandating these things. And so, knowing that it's this is something that's going to be a difficult mandate for our schools to absorb. I love being able to have them innovate and create and find their local ways of going deeper into this if they want. The other, you know, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, when we look at this type of mandate, we have to be able to have that honest conversation with our local school districts and what that's going to look like. And so that's why I won't be able to support this bill today, but I appreciate that we are bringing forward the conversation. And with that, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, closing comments, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your thoughtful comments and discussion. I would say a few things. One is, I do find it, I recognize it, but I find it unfortunate that this bill language is construed with a political agenda. Climate change is happening. It falls disproportionately on those least advantaged among us. If we need to use a different word besides justice so that it's not political, fine, but that's just unfortunate. Those are two truisms, and we should be able to deal with that. I do really appreciate the constructive comments, and I also want to celebrate the work the students did. But the way we celebrate that is not just to tell them, good job, and pat them on the back. The way we celebrate it is for each one of us in here to work with me and with them to correct the things that we want and come with something that can become law. So I ask for all of your support on behalf of the students for that.
Thank you, Representative Kraft, for your closing comments and putting it back on us to think what we can do to make this move forward in a way that's powerful and respects what we've heard today and what we know to be the truth. So thank you. Thank you, students, for testifying. Thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this bill over. And with that, Representative Keeler renews her motion to lay over House File 2297 for further consideration. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to be able to get to our caucuses on time today. and with that, the meeting is adjourned.